Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 95 of Generation GC, Right Where I Belong, from Good Charlotte's fifth album, Cardiology, released in 2010. My name is Molly Huddleston. Once again, and as always, I'm your host, as well as the producer, creator, and editor of this podcast. My guest today is Will Carey of the podcast Between Awesome and Disaster. Last time, we talked about a song from Good Morning Revival. Our next episode will be a bonus episode covering something that is not a Good Charlotte studio album track. Will Carey is a stand-up comic and podcaster based in New York City. He grew up in Southern Maryland, about an hour from the home of Good Charlotte. That's Waldorf, y'all. He also has a podcast Between Awesome and Disaster where he talks to musicians, comedians, and more. I highly suggest checking out Will's show. It's a lot of fun. He talks to a whole lot of people that you guys probably love, and he's even had a few Generation GC guests on his show as well. So we had a lot of fun talking. On a personal note, I am super happy to share that my recovery from knee surgery is continuing to go really, really well, and I am back home in Philadelphia! I'm recording this intro July 17th, 2022, which is only 10 days since my surgery, and I'm already feeling more confident and comfortable going up and down stairs than I did before. There's definitely like a really long way to go till I am where I want to be. Surgery was a big help, it doesn't fix everything, but I'm really optimistic so far. In the first 10 days of recovery have just been super encouraging for what's going to be in the store. As for a show update, episode 96 of Generation GC, which is going to come out next week on July 27th, will be the last episode for this block, if you will. I have several episodes planned that I will record following that, and then I'm planning to be releasing more episodes in September. I also wanted to say that I love having guests from all around the world and from all different backgrounds on Generation GC. If English isn't your first language, that's okay. As long as you're comfortable holding a conversation in English, you're good to go. And different backgrounds doesn't just mean location or ethnicity. It means ensuring a varied gender and sexuality representation and representing fans of different ages and fans with your own unique life experiences of any sort. My goal is that anyone listening to the show will feel like they are represented. And if you're listening to this and thinking, hey, I would love to come on Generation GC. I've got something to say. I've got a story to share. I have some thoughts on Good Charlotte. Hit me up. Finally, Generation GC stickers are here. If you do want a sticker, all you've got to do is go to anchor.fm/generationgcpod and click support. All that money goes right back into making the show the best that it can be. It helps me print and ship the stickers. It also helps me buy things I need for the show on my end, from headphones to a laptop riser to pens and notebooks and post-its so I can organize my notes as I'm getting ready. So, you're going to support the show on Anchor. You're going to send me a screenshot of your support. You can email generationgcpod@gmail.com. You can also find me on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, generationgcpod. And you can send me your mailing address as well, and I will send you stickers. Thank you all for tuning into episode 95. I am so excited to share this episode. Right Where I Belong is one of my absolute all-time favorite Good Charlotte songs. It, to me, is so emblematic of the band as a whole and everything they represent. It brings together so many important themes, and Will and I just had so much fun talking. We had a lot in common, and I think you're going to like this episode. Get ready to listen. All right, so today we are talking about Right Where I Belong, which is track 14 on Cardiology, Good Charlotte's fifth album released in 2010. Track 13 is 1979, track 15 is Cardiology, and this is definitely going to end up in our recorded intro, but if you've been listening to this show or you have been following me on Twitter or you just know me, you know that this is like my favorite Good Charlotte song, along with The Outfield and probably a couple others, but this song means a lot to me and I'm super excited. This song was written by Benji and Joel Madden, along with Matt Squire, who, from my research, it seemed like Matt Squire helped writing on the music, but not the lyrics. And whenever I find there's a co-writer on a GC track, I like to dig into them. Okay, Matt Squire has a pretty good resume. Lots of Panic at the Disco, Ariana Grande, All Time Low, 303, One Direction, Under Oath, Neck Deep, The Amity Affliction, Big Time Rush, Boys Like Girls, Demi Lovato, The Main. Just to name a few. And, you know, if you look him up, you'll be like, oh, I know that song and that song and that song and that song. So pretty cool name.
Yeah, he's sort of like, he and John Feldman are like these sort of like behind the scenes sort of like unsung heroes of like modern pop punk. Like they do a ton of writing with lots of, I would imagine, a lot of our same favorite bands.
I don't
know how I didn't know Matt Squire's name before this, but now I'm like, yeah, okay, he did a lot of writing with a lot of artists I really like.
Oh yeah.
John Feldman, of course, I was a little more familiar with. Also, John Feldman, if you're listening to this and you want to come on this podcast, like, please, anytime. I'd love to have you.
Yeah, he seems like a really cool guy.
Oh, he seems so cool. Right Where I Belong was not a single. It has never been played live. And I'm thinking about this as I'm seeing it. I don't know if Benji sings the whole song, but I know he at least does, like, the verses, because you can kind of tell the verses sound, to me, it's pretty clearly Benji.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's because Benji's singing voice has, I think, a little bit more grit to it than Joel's does.
Grit, like raspy,
Yeah, he comes from more of his, like, throat, that sort of, like, punk rock affectation, whereas Joel's voice, I've always found, is, like, fairly unique for pop punk bands, especially of this era.
Yeah.
Like, you can hear him sing, and you can tell that it's a good Charlotte song, because his voice, like, it's not all through the nose. Like, lots of...
like Tom DeLonge or Newfound Glory.
Yeah, or like all the bands that imitated.
And I love Tom DeLonge, by the way. But yeah, no, exactly. Oh, yeah. We're going to talk a lot about Tom DeLonge today.
Well, that's great, because he's a hero of mine.
So. Yeah. It's got a lot to talk about with Right Where I Belong. But before that, Will, I really want to help our listeners get to know you. The first thing I like to ask everyone is, when did you first hear Good Charlotte and what were your first thoughts on them?
The first time I heard Good Charlotte was when I was watching the classic 2000s comedy, Dude, Where's My Car?
Yes!
And Little Things from their self-titled album is in the scene where Ashton Kutcher and Sean William Scott are driving around in a convertible and they pull up next to I think it's Fabio, the model actor Fabio, with some like gorgeous model, and they're like doing that sort of like, oh hey how's it going, and then they get into that back and forth of like, oh well, I'm gonna put my arm around this girl, oh yeah, well I'm gonna put my arm around my bud, oh yeah, well I'm gonna make out with this girl, and we're like, oh yeah, well we're gonna up you too, we're gonna make out, like that's the first time I heard Good Charlotte. And then I saw their self-titled album in stores, and I was like, I looked at the back and saw that they had a song called Waldorf Worldwide. And I was like, I know Waldorf. I'm going to get this. And then that's how I became familiar with the band. And then, and this was even, I think, before Young and Hopeless came out. So I felt like I was not early to Good Charlotte, but early.
I would argue that anyone that got into Good Charlotte pre Young and the Hopeless, I would argue that's an early fan, because Young and the Hopeless was like this big explosion for them. Right. And that's how like the public outside of, you know, people who were already into like alternative music, for the most part, that's how the public kind of really found out about them, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you were like in and interested in like this scene of punk rock at the time, you probably had heard of them, but I feel like their mainstream breakthrough was with Young and Hopeless and Lifestyles, of course.
Definitely. And Will, the second question I always ask everyone is, have you ever seen a Good Charlotte live?
And this is where I'm going to lose credibility, because no, I haven't, but I really want to.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. When the world went into lockdown in 2020, I remember... I think it was Kate Vertz who we were like chatting on Twitter, and she said, I think they probably won't tour till like 2023. And, you know, they'll probably want to have more new music out, but they probably won't put new music out till it's like really and truly safe to tour. And I was like, nah, it won't be that long. And now I'm like, yeah, maybe it will be that long.
Yeah. Cause that was kind of a tough decision for a lot of bands during lockdown. Right. It's like, we've got this album, do we just sit on it or do we put it out?
Well, there's this band Arizona that I love. And they put out an album in like October 2019 and like didn't even get a chance to tour off of it before COVID hit. And
yeah,
they're like teasing. I think they've been sort of teasing that they're like going to put out a new album, but like, man, that second album is just like kind of like disappeared to the public in a sense.
I know. I'm a big fan of the band Stand Atlantic. And
they're so good.
Oh, they're amazing. And they had that album Pink Elephant that they didn't really get the tour on. And now they're they just put out a new one.
Oh, wait, like, what do you mean just put out a new one? I didn't even know this. Like, how recently are you talking?
Like in the last month, they just put out another full length. Yeah.
Oh my God. I didn't even know that. I'm super excited now.
Yeah. It's really good too.
No, that makes me super happy because I saw them in like 2019 and then sort of rediscovered them like last fall with, I think Pink Elephant might be the one.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, yeah, I like this a lot. Well, something I have to ask about you is you're a comedian. I mean, I just want to know a little more about that. Like, do you feel like that's something you learned or was that just, you always were like a funny person?
I would say I feel confident saying I've always had a sense of humor. But what I had to learn was the craft of being a stand-up comic, which is very different from just kind of being naturally funny. Right. Like, it took me, and I've been doing stand-up for 15 years now. So lots of the things that I learned outside of just like joke structure, like setup, punchline, and then you have a little tag at the end, or how to tell a story and have jokes along the way, or how to just even seem like myself, like on stage, the way I am off stage. Like when I first started doing stand-up, I was very inspired by like surrealist one-liner comics, like Stephen Wright or Mitch Hedberg, Dimitri Martin. So I would go on stage and have that kind of persona. I would be very deadpan, which is not how I am on off stage. But over the last few years, I feel pretty good about my progress. Like when I go on stage, I am a lot more like I am off stage, and I'm still telling similar jokes or like doing slightly longer jokes. But my progress has been like being comfortable on stage and being myself on stage.
I mean, I think being comfortable on stage and finding out how to be yourself on stage, if any performer, I think, can relate to that journey, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. And to put this in like a band context, like it's the difference between like going from like just staring at your feet and your instrument the entire show.
Yeah.
To like when you get into being like in a punk band where you've got to like spin your guitar around your neck and you got to run around the stage
and just like more facial expressions when you sing and like just getting into it and being able to show the emotions as you sing or get into the music, get into the vibes.
Oh, exactly. Like I'll give you an example. Last night I went and saw Newfound Glory live on the 20-year anniversary tour for Sticks and Stones. And you can tell like a band that has been playing that album for 20 years, like Chad is like running off, like Chad's like going off in the crowd, or Jordan is like high-fiving people as they crowd surf, or Ian's like getting way up to the stage and like mouthing the lyrics. That sort of confidence comes from like, from continuous repetition.
Newfound Glory tours super consistently in like, I mean, this is not the first Sticks and Stones tour they've done. And they just tour absolutely constantly. So that's a great example. I also want to ask about your podcast Between Awesome and Disaster. So
yes,
you have some comedians, it looks like some friends of yours. You have a lot of musicians on there. I just want to shout out, I mean, there's like 200 something episodes. So I just want to shout out a couple of guests that caught my eye as I'm scrolling. Henry Menzel of Keep Flying. I've known him for a while. Great Alex fan. Cern of Big D and the Kids Table. A couple past Generation GC guests, which was Devin Parker of Till Morning and Mark Giuliano of Goalkeeper. You had, nice. I think it was Zach from Man Overboard. You had Casey Cavalier of the Wonder Years. You had Brian Joyce, who, I mean, I have a major league tattoo. I've interviewed Brian many times. He's the greatest.
I love Brian. He's such a great dude.
He's so great. I just have to know though, like, I am just so impressed by how consistently you've been doing this since it looked like 2016 you started. What do you think are the keys to, staying consistent, but also not getting bored?
Well, that's a great question, because I think in podcasting, consistency is key to mm-hmm. building a relationship with a community and an audience.
Yeah.
Base level, what helps me is that I find joy in the work. So kind of the thrill of like seeking out and trying to get some of these bigger guests or reaching out to my friends. I like talking to people, like, and having these kinds of longer conversations and the kind of stuff that you don't have in maybe a more modern sort of like surface level society, like your coworkers, like. So love of the process is a big part of it. And then something that I learned, especially early on, because I've been fairly consistent the last few years, but when I was starting, it was a little bit more difficult. So just more practical advice, I'll say, if you're doing like an interview podcast where you have like a guest or a couple of guests, definitely try to schedule a couple every week. Like, pick your schedule, whether you're doing once a week or every other week. And then once you pick the schedule, do everything you can to stick to that and give yourself a couple of guests or interviews a week. That way, if somebody has to drop out for any reason, because I work,
if you're sick or
exactly. So, yeah. So like I remember lots of times, because like interviewing stand-up comics, if they get a gig offer at the last minute, they take it.
Yeah.
They got to reschedule. Or I remember one time my old apartment got broken into.
Oh my God.
And so like, obviously I had to reschedule that interview, but just having, you know, giving yourself that kind of buffer is super helpful. Like, I was just in, and part of the reason we had to reschedule this episode is because I was in Argentina for a couple of weeks.
That's so cool. I don't blame you for rescheduling, because Argentina sounds awesome.
It was truly, truly wonderful. And before I went, I like, you know, I had my three episodes that I was going to release planned, ready to go. So that's a big part of it. Like, planning will help you a lot in staying consistent. And especially, it's tough if you're a one or two person operation. Like, I'm a one person operation, but, you know, joy of what you're doing and love of that process is, what helps get you through. And I think it's important to remember, if you're a creative person, you don't just want to wait for all of the joy doesn't all come once you quote make it.
Yeah.
Joy along the way.
I agree with that a lot. And I think if you get into a good point in this, I mean, you're also a musician, I know. And I've felt that a lot myself, is like, you have to find joy in the doing it, right? Like, mm-hmm. I have joy in doing my research to put together these notes, right? Like, yeah, you know, sometimes I am like scrambling a little bit because I just, you know, forgot or I had a busy week, but I find joy in doing the notes. I have a lot of fun just being like picking out all the different details, all the things I can talk about. And then I have so much fun having these conversations, and I love putting together the episode and doing my intro, you know, and of course I love hearing what people say about it, but I think that's such a good point. It's kind of hard to have sustainability if you don't have joy in doing it. Like, there has to be joy in doing it and not just joy in hearing other people say they like it.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think in that way, if you're not enjoying the process, then it just feels like a regular job. Like this, like when it comes to music, like I like playing and writing original songs. So that's what I do. I could probably make more money if I like actually like studied and had music theory and I could play like random jazz gigs and stuff, but that's not where my heart lies. So, and I knew that wouldn't make me happy. So I focus my energies on what I want to do.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I've definitely had a lot of, I mean, and I'll not going to go into Twitch's file, but I've had a lot of just creative journeys over the past few years and like dealing with, you know, I've definitely had a challenge the past 7 months dealing with some pretty big knee issues that like take up a lot of my time that I wish I could spend podcasting, because I'm like going to the doctor, I'm doing physical therapy, I'm doing this and that. But
yeah,
it's I think, again, that gets into, you know, building yourself like a bank of episodes. And that just makes it all easier. Before we get into Right Where I Belong, one more song or one more question I have to ask you is, who is like your top bucket list guest for your podcast?
Dream top bucket list guest would be Tom DeLonge or Mark Hoppus. Only because those are the two guys that like are the reasons I'm creative at all. Like I heard What's My Age Again, and then I heard Carousel, and I wanted to pick up guitar. I wanted to pick up bass. I would love to talk to Travis too. I just would, maybe if I was going to talk to Travis, I would want to focus more on like his production work.
Right. Right.
Just cause I'm not a, just cause I'm not a drummer. So I don't, I can't speak the,
or you can't the language. Speak the technicalities. Yeah. No, I love that you say that. I am sending all the good vibes to you. Angels and Airwaves / the whole Blink breaking up and then the side projects and they got back to their like reading all those interviews. That's why I became a music journalist. So, and we're going to have a lot of fun talking about this song today.
Awesome.
So, well, let's get into it, Will. I mean, we connected a while ago on Twitter. You know, you told me you had found this podcast just through, I think, like similar recommendations from your own show.
Yep.
And I'm just super happy to have you here. And I know you sent me like a couple different songs you're interested in talking about. Why did you want to talk about Right Where I Belong?
Because I just really, I really like it. I think it's one of my, I think it's my favorite song off of Cardiology, which is honestly an album I slept on for a little while. And then when I came around to it, I was like, oh, this is really great. This is where it takes me back to like Young and Hopeless era.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember listening to Right Where I Belong and just really liking the production, the melody of the music, all of the stuff they do with guitar and the percussion in the verses. I just really dug it. And as someone who likes to like listen to music and think cinematically when they write or get creative, this song I would place as like if I was writing, scoring like a young adult, like coming of age movie, this is like, this is the song I would put for like at the end, once our main character is like gotten through a whole bunch of stuff, they figured some stuff out about themselves.
And they're like with their tribe, they found their.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That exactly that. So
yeah,
it's got this sort of like anthemic quality to it that I really
yeah. Like. That's an anthemic. That's a great way to put it. I do want to get into what the song means, but first I just want to ask real quick, what's your favorite line from this song?
If all we are is where we've been, then I know where I want to be.
Oh, I like that. That's great. I wrote down from the first verse, that's when I feel that God is all around me, because I just think that the way he says that is so powerful, and like the conviction with which he says that I think is beautiful. And I hope that, you know, there's a lot to talk about with the song, but I hope that whether you take a religious aspect from this song or you are not a religious person at all, I would hope that you can just hear like the conviction and the like power of the belief in that line.
Certainly.
Let's get into this song. I mean, I want to hear what you think it means. I'll share my thoughts and then we can dive into what the band has said.
Absolutely. So my first, interpretation of the song and bringing somewhat of what I know from their other songs to this.
Mm-hmm.
The lyrics to me sound like somebody who had a belief, maybe not even faith or religious faith, but let's just say like belief that they have gotten very far away from and they are regretting it. They feel some sort of negative feelings.
Like they've let themselves down.
Yeah, or they've let themselves or somebody else. You got a thought? Tell me.
Yes, I got a thought. So this song follows "There She Goes," which is suggested it was written about the twins' mom, although I don't think it's been confirmed. But "There She Goes" is also about like the she. You know, they've let this she down, and that is such a good thematic like role into what you're saying about this song, and I love that.
Yeah. So that's also a great thought. And I think that makes a lot of sense, because I feel like in the Good Charlotte lyrical universe, I think that their mom, their belief in God or spirituality and the concept of home are all intertwined.
Yeah.
Because for the longest time, that's what they had after their dad left. Mm-hmm. And I think the lyrics in this song represent someone who's, because when you go through the roller coaster of becoming like a pop culture figure and mainstream show business, it's an absolute it's like being in a dryer.
Yeah, how could it, especially Good Charlotte, who got so much constant like backlash from the press the twins for their personal lives as well. Like how are you dating this celebrity fan?
Yeah, exactly. And like, and cause they've never been like a critical darling. They've always been a band that has been like championed by the fans and the passion of the fan base. So I think maybe there's a little bit of, they felt like they've gotten away from maybe the values or of what their mom taught them or what their faith taught them. But then there's also this kind of realization that even though you feel in the lyrics that even though he feels like he's gone really far away, he really didn't, because God is everywhere, which is something I've heard a lot of Christians say, and my Christian fans. And then if the light's always on, it's like, you're never not too far away.
So
I was never not there.
Right. And so I'll get into kind of a little bit of my own interpretation in a sec, but I'm Jewish, very, very reformed Jewish, but I went to a Jewish preschool. I had a bat mitzvah. I remember being in preschool and learning that God is everywhere. Right. Mm-hmm. And they would like hold up a marker and say, God is in this marker. And it's the kind of thing I think you don't really think about as like a 3-year-old, because 3-year-olds like don't really have like a concept of like what that means. But I like what you're saying, that like, this person feels like they have lost themselves, or they have let, I think there's some element of like, they feel like they've let themselves down. And, I think what's so powerful to me about this song, why I connect with so much, is it kind of encapsulates some big themes in Good Charlotte's music, which are, faith and beliefs and versus doubt and kind of getting away from it and that whole journey. And also this journey of being an outsider and versus wanting to fit in or finding the place you fit in, and kind of this like dichotomy of, well, I'm an outsider, but I really want to fit in, but I also want to be myself, but I also want people to like me. But, and this, I think, just really ties that in, like finding God again, maybe God or that love was never gone, but finding it for yourself again. And also realizing that like, oh yeah, no, you've been in the place where you belong. And we could tie it into Good Charlotte's sort of musical journey and say, okay, like music was where they belong. And actually music has always been that place, even with, all of the confusion and backlash and stuff they got, and that music has always been where they as individuals belong.
I really agree with that, because there was a few years between this and Good Morning Revival.
Yeah. And yeah. One, this album had to be re-recorded and.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, and I feel like they did this because they want to, because they're probably at the point, they probably made like stupid amounts of.
Yeah.
Of
financially, money. they were. Yeah.
Yeah. So now they're coming to it. So now they're back to music because they want to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you can hear that in this song. One other thing I want to mention about the lyrics specifically. So in the first verse of this song, they mention West Hastings Street.
I tried to figure out where it is too.
So it's in Vancouver, and I remember being on tour in Vancouver. Yeah, he says, as I leave the empty station, first thing I see is the sun over the mountains, West Hastings Street. And I remember being on tour and stopping in Vancouver, and we pull off the highway and we're on West Hastings Street. And it's like, it's a main road in Vancouver, right? Very busy road. So I'm looking up the studios that they recorded at. So there was part of this album was recorded at Studio Can-Am in Tarzana, California. So Los Angeles area. I think that's like the Valley. And then there were two studios in Vancouver, the Armory and the Warehouse Studio, which is just a few blocks off of East Hastings Street. So like, I have it noted here, like, why was it, you know, if, I mean, maybe why was it West Hastings Street in the song if the studio was off East Hastings Street? Like, is he referring to the empty station as somewhere that's not the studio? Or they mixed it up, or did West just sound better? I don't know.
Yeah, I would have to say maybe it's either West sounds better, like in the flow of the lyrics.
Yeah.
Or maybe wherever this empty station,
maybe like a subway station.
Yeah, maybe West Hastings is the one you see compared to East.
Yeah. I mean, so I looked up, I like zoomed down on the map a little because I'm like, okay, maybe it was like a block from where it became West Hastings. And it's like a little bit, but maybe he took the subway to West Hastings, or maybe there was a hotel there or like a radio station. I don't know. But one of those unanswered questions, right?
Yeah, that's like one of the big ones in the GC lore.
Yeah. So we're going to skip around a teeny bit. I want to get into a little bit of the backstory. So this song is definitely a deep cut, like not a lot of interviews that talk about it. Benji did talk about this in his Track by Track for Alternative Press. Mm-hmm. He says, to me, God and music go hand in hand. At certain points in my life and my career, I've lost my way just like any one of us. No matter what happens or what I experience, God and music are always waiting for me with open arms. This song says just that. This is one that I really hope the GC fam listen to closely. It's really personal and special to me.
And yeah, I think it sounds not too far off from
what kind we've of both our been initial
interpretations of it. I mean, I never, outside of like tabloid relationship stuff, I'm not aware of any, I guess, Benji's more like deeper issues. I don't know if he ever struggled with mental health or drugs or
he's pretty private, I think, in terms of his personal life.
Yeah. So but I imagine like most people, there's probably some things he's wrestled with. But again, what are the safe places? The safe places are belief with his mom and then the band. And music, because the band is also family because his brother is in the band. And then if you're in a band with people long enough, I know this from experience, you become like brothers or sisters.
And Josh has also, I think, tour managed GC. I think he works at Madden. Like, so it's really a family business.
Oh, yeah.
The other interview we're going to mention, you know, as we've discussed, Good Charlotte scrapped the original version of this album that had been recorded with Howard Benson. And there was an interview with Seattle Pie that Billy did, and they asked him, out of the 100 demos that you recorded, were there any that you knew instantly were going to be on the album? He says, yeah, there were a couple. He talks about Let the Music Play, and then he said, there were a couple songs that had made it through the beginning, like Right Where I Belong and Can't Dream Without You. Both of those were demos earlier on. 1979 was another song that's been around since the beginning demo stages. I think any of the songs that made it through multiple producers and made it from demo to record, back to demo, back to record again, those are strong songs.
And I agree with that, because to go through that many layers of alternative sets of years, because along the way, based on my knowledge of like working with producers, they will have thoughts about your songs along the way, and changes will get made along the way as well. So for a song to go through several layers of producers, and it's probably been rewritten maybe a couple times or had been tweaked, it can't help but make the song like incredibly like solid as far as like structure wise, lyric wise, and hook wise.
Definitely. It, you know, what's a little funny to me though, in reading that interview is like, I always kind of assumed this song came in the later parts of recording this album. And the reason I say that is because, you know, they talked a lot about feeling like Howard Benson didn't like get the band, and that they mm-hmm. weren't making a record that felt like true to themselves. And so I always just assumed that this song, mistakenly assumed, but assumed that this song came later because it was like like I found like revelation again, I found home again, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Clearly there, you know, some bit of it, I mean, the Sun Over the Mountains, West Hastings Street, that probably came a little later on.
Mm-hmm.
But I am really curious to know more about just everything that led up to the song now, now that I know it came earlier in the recording process.
Yeah. Like, were there different verses? Like, what changed? I would love to know, like, what changed? Like, if they ever put out like a demos collection.
Yeah. I did recently get, and I'll have to send this to you, but a past guest of the show sent me a Cardiology, I don't know if it was a demo track, but a track that was like included on like an early version of the album that was sent to press that like I had not heard before. So I will send that.
Yeah, please do. Later. I'm very anxious to hear that.
Yeah. I want to touch on genre. So like there's definitely, you know, religion going on in this song. And like, look, there's a lot of good Charlotte songs that like can be taken to be about faith or religion or God. Mm-hmm. I mean, he says, God is all around me, which is, I think, like, very explicitly explicit, religious. Yeah. But, like, I mean, is this, it's not really gospel, but, like, could we call this, like, Christian rock or CCM? Where do you draw the line between a band that have certain beliefs and share them in a certain song and, you know, even like Switchfoot, who are pretty mainstream for Christian mm-hmm. music, but I would say Switchfoot is definitely like a Christian band.
Well, to me, the difference is where are they big? Like Good Charlotte are a big mainstream band, and they're big outside of Christian circles and the Christian market. Whereas bands like Jars of Clay, what Red Jumpsuit Apparatus have turned into. Pillar, Newsboys,
Newsboys, yeah.
Sonic Flood, Hawk Nelson, like all of those bands are pretty clearly like aimed at the Christian market.
Wait, sorry to interrupt, but are you saying Red Jumpsuit Apparatus has like gone into more of the Christian market? I thought they came from that and then they like went mainstream. Are they like sort of now have recently been going back into a Christian market?
Nowadays that's where they primarily are. I saw a video on YouTube from a YouTuber called Todd in the Shadows, where he talked about Face Down and then what they've been up to lately. Mm-hmm. And he basically said, we're hitting, and then it cut to an interview with them where it's like, we're charting high on the Christian charts, which is all that matters now.
Okay.
So that's where I think Red Jumpsuit are. And then I'll make one other distinction, and it's, I don't know if it's it's kind of a bummer. There is this Christian pop punk band named Stellar Cart.
Okay.
I discovered them, I think, on Pure Volume back in college.
Wow, like TBT, way
back in the day. And I was like, oh, this is a catchy song. The song I heard was about being a driver's ed instructor. And then they also had a really catchy song, a really good cover of Living on a Prayer. And then I ordered the album, and then they have like songs that are like, you are Lord and up high. That is very clearly like a worship kind of angle. And then the other key di- They also had another song called Life is Good, Eternal Life is Better. Those are very like, yeah, very explicitly like Christian youth group kind of sayings. And then the other thing that really made, turned me off of the band is I found footage of them playing at a very explicitly pro-life music festival that I don't think exists anymore, but I don't see Good Charlotte doing that.
I mean, when I was on, so I was on Warped Tour in 2016 when Good Charlotte was on, and they were only on for, you know, a couple weeks, for like 2 weeks or something. But for some part of that summer, there was like a Rock for Life organization. I don't think GC ever spoke out against them on stage. But I don't think GC, I don't even know if they knew about this, because I don't think they like walked the grounds, you know, to kind of know what all the tents were. But like a lot of the, a lot of bands would speak out against this Rock for Life organization.
Yeah.
You know, it just brings up a lot of questions to me as we talk about like what's a Christian band or not. You know, like did, you know, as the narrator of the song, are they saying they lost their belief, like they are doubting whether, you know, whether God is real, or are they losing themselves and they've let God down? I mean, I guess it's kind of, even as I'm talking, I'm like, I guess it's kind of, there's some element of both I'm getting.
Yeah, it could be, it could come from a couple of different places. There could be like, I've let myself down and I'm a spiritual person. So I say spiritual to distinguish from being religious.
Yeah, that's a good distinction.
I've let myself down. I've betrayed what I've been taught. And so I've doubly let myself down. So there's probably that. And then I think if you are a religious person and you're honest with yourself, and I'm speaking from my experience, I'm speaking specifically about Christianity. Yeah. If you're paying attention and you're self-aware, you will find contradictions in things you're taught versus how people act versus what people say and do. And that, from my personal experience, is jarring.
Yeah.
So you will ask yourself a lot of questions as well. And then that, I think once you get in that situation, that's a point where you either leave or you redefine
what it means to you,
or to borrow a phrase from the movie Don't Look Up, you come to it in your own way.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I was just thinking about the episode, the Surprise Mother's Day release with Jordan Hayek on Thank You, Mom. And we spent a lot of time talking about the line in that song, "You taught me how to love my God," and talking a lot about how like faith can actually be personal. And there is like, I think something like really beautiful in like finding your own personal beliefs or faith outside of organized religion. And organized religion for some people has a lot of value. My parents are still like best friends with the parents of other kids I went to Jewish preschool with when I was 2 years old, right? And I'm 30 years old now. You know, there's a lot of issues with organized religion, but I don't want to like knock on it entirely as a concept. I want to read this page from answers.com. Someone asked, "Is Good Charlotte a Christian band?" The answer said, "Technically, Good Charlotte is not classified as a Christian band, although some songs contain some definite Christian references."
I agree with that.
Yeah. "Oh, seriously, in my belief, they are Christians. The song The River is about them being baptized on the sin of the world. They're kind of like Reliant K, just more of a rock band. They have Christian songs and Christian rock songs." I would say they're not as much of a like Christian band as Reliant K, but I also am not super, super familiar with like all of Reliant K's discography, but I get the impression Reliant K is like a little more objectively Christian.
Reliant K's earlier stuff, I think was, it had a little bit more like explicitly like faith-based lyrics or church-based lyrics or Jesus-based lyrics. By the time you got to and onward, I want to think of the best way to phrase this. By the time you got to their big breakthrough album,
yeah,
and then onward, you would see less lyrics. Like they had a lyric on their second album that went, "Never underestimate my Jesus. You're telling me there's no hope. I'm telling you, you're wrong." You didn't really see stuff like that in their lyrics like that in their later stuff. I'm sure it was still there. I don't think they ever stopped believing, but I think the Matt's lyric style definitely changed.
Okay. One artist I want to ask out real quick as we, I was just thinking about this as we were discussing like Christian rock or CCM versus like mainstream music. How do you play Switchfoot?
How do I play Switchfoot? I would describe them as a band whose members are Christian. But I wouldn't, I just don't really explicitly see them as a Christian band in the way I've seen other bands. Like I've seen Switchfoot in concert.
I have too. They're great.
And yeah, they're great. And like, you know,
they're not talking about like worship on stage.
Exactly. They're not like the 80s metal band Stryper. They're not throwing Bibles out into the crowd.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
But they don't, I mean, they have like some affiliation with like some Christian like festivals and Christian radio, don't they?
I believe they do. I don't know if that's, I'm not sure if that still is. I guess my thought on most of these bands that break through to the mainstream is that they leave that behind at a certain point. I could be completely wrong though.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, I had a Switchfoot phase in college, and I had a Switchfoot phase like a couple years ago. And I remember from what I picked up on, it seems like they kind of have like a little bit gone kind of back and forth on like how much they want to feel like a Christian band. I kind of feel like, but I didn't get the impression they totally left that behind, but that this was also even like 5 years ago that I, you know, was like digging heavy into, you know, them and their presence and everything.
Yeah.
I want to ask, Will, do you have any memories or stories that you want to share about Right Where I Belong?
I specifically remember listening to this song when I was in the Newark airport, ready to get a flight up to Boston.
All right. To see
my wife, because my wife travels for work a lot, and it became like my
quick flight.
Yeah. And then it kind of became my like plane takeoff song.
Cute. I like that.
Cause I like to score my life. Like I'm Hans Zimmer sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is like when the plane right takes off, I've just like, whoosh, and then I have this song play.
I love it. I mean, obviously I know Newark Airport very well.
I imagine so.
Yeah. What comes to mind for me is, a little more going to get pretty serious here, but a couple of years ago, I just remember like my grandma getting a call, like I'm working from home and getting a call that, you know, grandma's in the hospital, like it's not good. And like, you know, immediately, you know, like grabbing my wallet and my keys and like rushing out the door. And it was like, I want to say 45 minutes or an hour up to the hospital, probably like 45 minutes. Cause I definitely sped, you know, I'm like racing and just listening to this song for comfort and I turned to this song a lot for comfort in, you know, we ended up getting, I think like 2 more months with her, which is like the most incredible blessing, before she passed, and like, just definitely feeling just a lot of gratitude to like whatever forces of the universe that like gave me 2 more months with my grandmother, and turning to the song a lot for comfort in that time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so happy that you're able to get that.
Thank you. Thank you.
But yeah, that's like songs, when you tie them to moments like that, they become like very deeply connected. So I can certainly see. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to touch on other Good Charlotte songs this relates to. I mean, there's a couple that kind of stand out very clearly to me, but I'm curious what comes to mind for you.
Other Well, I really agree wholeheartedly with your assessment here that this is almost like a follow-up to The River. Because if The River is, The River is, again, like the baptism into chaos. That is the world of celebrity and LA show business. The trope that you come from a small town to LA and then it can like eat you alive with its darkness is, I think, true for a reason. So I almost see like, I'm almost imagining like The River is like our narrator, like going through the swirl and then The River like sends them off a waterfall or something. And then they land in the waterfall. And this is the song that they play and write as they like crawl up onto the muddy banks.
Of the
river.
Yeah.
So I really like your assessment on that. I agree with that.
Yeah. It just seems like such a clear follow-up to me. You know, the river, like this narrator has lost faith, or they've kind of gotten away from being the kind of person that lives their values. I think that's a good way to put it. Like,
oh, certainly.
You know, they've become a person they don't want to be. And, you know, and then there she goes, you know, they're someone else, possibly their mom, not confirmed, but possibly their mom, realizes like, hey, you're not living your values. And then I think in Right Where I Belong, it's like, they kind of come back to that. But you know, I think a lot of The Outfield, which, look, shock, surprise, that Right Where I Belong and The Outfield are my two favorite Good Charlotte songs. Cause that talks about, you know, what I get from The Outfield is like kind of always being an outsider, like your whole life. And then you finally find your person, or you finally find the place where you belong. But you know, we could even touch on like Little Things or Festival Song or The Anthem, all these other songs that talk about not belonging and sort of that dichotomy, right? Of like, I'm an outsider. I don't want to be just like you, but also I want to be liked, but I want people to like me. I want to have a community, but also I want to be myself.
It's the eternal human contradiction. We want to be individuals, but accepted in the group. It's odd. And I think it has a double layer for them, because punk is very much like that.
Yeah.
Punk has a set of values.
Punk can be super judgmental.
Oh yeah. No, it's completely hypocritical. Like it makes no sense. Like, that's why I've never, I love punk, but I would never call myself that, because it has its own like set of stuff that comes with it. But
I
know Benji like has said on the record that he considers himself a punk rocker, but he thinks Good Charlotte are more of a rock band. Cause there's a clear difference between like a band that sounds like punk rock and then like you're in the scene or what have you, because they've never shied away from the fact that they wanted to like be a successful band.
Yeah. I think they said, we want to be like Minor Threat and the Backstreet Boys. Like, we want to like, you know, be a punk rock band that speaks their values, but we want to be as famous as the Backstreet Boys.
Yeah. And I appreciate the honesty of that. And I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with that, because if you are starting, if that's the goal you set for yourself, I don't think there's anything objectionable to that, unless
living your own truth, right?
Yeah.
Which I would argue there's something very punk rock about living your own truth.
Very much so.
I mean, we could spend hours and hours just going in a rabbit hole of like, what is punk, and can you be punk while doing things that are not stereotypically considered punk? Like, hypocritical is a great way to put it.
Yeah, and I've done that rabbit hole before, and it'll drive you nuts.
I want to touch on, I have two artists listed here that have songs that kind of remind me of this. The first one I actually want to talk about is Tunnels by Angels and Airwaves. I'm sure you're familiar with the song.
Oh yes. I love Angels and Airwaves. Yeah. Right, and right. I like this one in particular.
Right. And well, I mean, what do you, you know, in your words, what is Tunnels about?
You know, I don't know if I've ever like sat down and really thought about, I've thought about it that much, because Tom is another guy who I think has a spirituality that doesn't really creep into much of his music, but when it does, you can definitely see that it's there, like in songs like A Little's Enough or mm-hmm. Snake Charmer, which oddly Ooh, yeah. is only on the deluxe edition of Neighborhoods.
Yeah, interesting.
But I definitely remember when I first heard the song, I was like, oh, this is like their version of an Angels and Airwaves song. And yeah. I'm here for it.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what a lot of commenters said online, you know, and mm-hmm. It's funny because I don't even know if I had read those comments before I like kind of fell in love with this song. And mm-hmm. Angels and Airwaves, like, is probably my number two favorite band. And like I said earlier, they are like very big part of why I became a music journalist, like uh-huh. ever at all. I love listening to like any interview that Tom does. I feel like I really understand the way he thinks, and I love their music. Mm-hmm. But I specifically mentioned Tunnels because that song was kind of written about this sort of juxtaposition between doubt and belief. And I think how he ultimately found it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the backstory to Tunnels is like, I guess there was a lot of, you know, doubt and belief, and Tom's dad was very, very ill and like in hospice. And it was something like, you know, he went to sleep, he wakes up in the middle of the night and has like all this energy. And then like 30 minutes later, mm-hmm. gets a call from the hospice nurse that his dad passed 30 minutes ago. And he was like, whoa, like kind of a spiritual moment of him getting this energy, like right at that moment. And
sure. Like, and seeing a clear connection between the two.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's a very good song to mention here. I mean, cause it's that sort of doubt and belief and like, what's real, what do I believe in? Another artist that I want to mention that I've definitely like talked about on their show a bit, but that I am just huge fan of is Bo Bascoro. He's a singer-songwriter from Portland. He's not like a famous artist. Probably a lot of people don't know much about him, but I am just such a big fan of his music. And whenever I think about this sort of, you know, transition, if you will, from The River into Right Where I Belong, mm-hmm. I think about two songs Bo Bascoro has, which are Oasis and Levy. Uh-huh. And Oasis is kind of like, you know, you're sort of wanting to find someone to set you free, but not sure like if anyone or anything could really revitalize you. And then Levy is like, you find that someone and you're like ready for redemption. You're ready for things to change. And he's not a huge artist. I think he's super talented. I listen to his music like almost every day. Like, I love Bo Bascoro. Uh-huh. He has not, to my knowledge, confirmed that these are about like religion or faith, but to me at least, it's kind of, and again, like I don't think either of them say God in them, but mm-hmm. to me, the metaphor is there. Like I feel like I can't ignore the metaphor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hadn't heard of these songs before, and I listened to them. I was like, these are very catchy.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah, I think, well, he has a song called High, Can't Keep Up. And in that song, he says, I stopped asking God for anything. Mm-hmm. So we could even go back to that and say, he's got somewhat of that in his journey somewhere. Mm-hmm. But if I ever am able to interview Bo, that's definitely something I'd want to talk about for sure.
Oh, yeah. I bet that would be a really interesting conversation.
Yeah.
I hope you get to do that.
Because I bet,
and this is what I've learned from interviewing people, is that artists love to get questions that they haven't been asked before. And I bet no one's asked him that.
Yeah. I mean, read, listened to every interview with him that I have been able to get my hands on, and I haven't found that. So, I want to get into reviews of this album. I mean, there were not a lot. I only found two reviews that mentioned this song. Seattle Pie, who did that interview with Billy, they also reviewed the album, and they, in general, they seem to like how the band grew up. So they say, in songs like Harlow Song, 1979, and Right Where I Belong, you can tell how much the band has matured lyrically. These songs are a departure from the angst and some of their music from their earlier times, and the focus is on the good that they have had in their lives.
And I agree with that, because this is, it reflects that they're writing about where they are now.
Yeah.
Instead of just trying to write for who their fans were when they were younger.
Yeah. I think there's definitely like a part of Good Charlotte's story, which is like, you know, who are they writing for? Are they writing for themselves? Are they writing for the fans? Are they writing for the general public? Right. And I would imagine if I were able to sit down with any of them and really dig into things, that could lead to an interesting discussion. And, you know, what is it moving on Youth Authority, where they say, like, celebrate us when we're gone, forget what we did wrong. And like, when we did the episode on that song, we talked about that line, and we even talked about cardiology, because it's like, you know, they don't play anything from cardiology almost ever. It's like almost forgotten, and, you know, they were on a different label, and you know, when they speak about the hiatus, they say they felt like the band had gotten away from themselves. So I just would be really interested to talk to them about, like, okay, who are you writing for, and what's that journey been like of who are you writing for at different times, and can you write for yourself and also the fans?
Yeah, I wonder about that too. And maybe in a way, now if they write for themselves, they are writing for the fans, because the fans will have grown and matured with them. Can I also ask you, before we go further, when you did the moving on episode from Youth Authority, did you think or discuss any sort of connection between the song Moving On from The Young and the Hopeless?
We talked a little about that, and we were kind of like, why did they have two songs with the same name?
Spelled differently.
Yeah. So I, you know, in the titles for those episodes, I specified, you know, the album, just to be super clear to fans, to listeners. You know, Moving On from Young and the Hopeless is kind of like, look, we've been through a lot of shit, but we're going to keep going. Like, it's very like inspirational. And Moving On from Youth Authority, like, part of it's kind of depressing, because it's kind of hard to listen to that and not take, oh, Good Charlotte's like breaking up again. Right. Even though they didn't, but obviously things have kind of just changed a lot in terms of how much they tour and everything. But that's another thing I'd be curious to ask, if I could ever sit down with them and dig into it, is like, you know, was that intended as a follow-up to Moving On from Being the Hopeless, or was it just like, no, we just liked that line?
I imagine, and it could be just as simple as that. Sometimes I feel like fans and listeners can maybe take stuff that is, or see things that the artist didn't always intend. I've read lots of interviews with like indie bands where the fans are like, this is a reference to Icarus flying too close to the sun. And then the artist is like, no, I had these chords and they sounded cool with these words.
Yeah. But that's the beauty of art, is people interpreting it in the way that rings true to them. Right.
Oh yeah. That is what is so amazing about it. That's why Sting writes a great song about the government stalking you, and everybody slow dances to it for eternity.
Yeah. So the one other review we're going to read about this song is from Spin, And like, oh,
these insufferable hipsters.
Yeah. And like, Spin was not big on this song or this album, but like, also, has Spin ever been big on Good Charlotte? And also, is there any part of Spin that is like the target audience for Good Charlotte? And by that, I mean, not like kind of pretentious in some of their reviews, like not like a pitchfork, but you know, a little pretentiousness. Although I will say this is not the meanest Good Charlotte review I have read. Last time we heard from these pop punk glamour boys on 2007's Good Morning Revival, frontman Joel Madden was reflecting on his breakup with Hilary Duff over synth up mall rock, not unlike Duff's own. That's actually kind of a clever line, and I hadn't even thought of that comparison. Not saying I 100% agree with it, but it's a clever line, and it's fair for them to point out. 3 years and two little Maddens later, Cardiology dials down the sparkle, which is kind of a bummer. Plotting fake U2 anthems such as Right Where I Belong are definitely not Good Charlotte's sweet spot.
Yeah, I thought that was... I didn't think that was a fairly accurate assessment of this, yeah, of this song. I think some music journalists just hear Delay and automatically go to U2 because U2 are so synonymous with that effect.
And to be fair, there's definitely some religion go in U2, right? I mean, so it's not a totally off base comparison, I don't think. Is this a fake U2 anthem? I mean, I feel like that's a little generalizing, and also just to me, that kind of shows that you don't really understand Good Charlotte's music, that this is like touching on a lot of like major themes of Good Charlotte's music. Like lyrically anyway. Look, musically, you know, that's kind of a different story, but I don't know. I think this person clearly did not know. I would guess this person did not know Good Charlotte beyond the singles.
I would imagine so.
Yeah. I want to read some YouTube comments. This was a fan upload by Some Fan Rock. Good Charlotte, the band account has turned off comments. There was an account that said Tom DeLong, not this. This is not actually Tom DeLong. But this person said, I love that it sounds like Needles and Airwaves. I spent months trying to find a similar song about similarity. Don't worry. Ava fans appreciate good stuff being made by other bands. And like another person, AK, says it's a great song because it sounds like Needles and Airwaves. So yeah, we're not the only ones that, you know, see that comparison. I heard
that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Alexander Allen says it's really incredible to see bands even stigmatized as punk and stuff showing their Christian values through their songs. Rock on, GC. Allison Tumala says, I love this song. I first came across it when Joel Madden put it in his It Gets Better video, which I did not even remember that because I remember that video. I didn't remember the music that was playing during it. And then Jen T says, I'm still a GC fan at 26 and I can relate to their songs. It took a long look in the mirror to reflect and see this song is no different.
Yep.
I think this person is seeing that like, oh yeah, no, I grew up and, you know, I've changed and, oh, actually I relate to this song too. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Because she grew, the band grew. And I love when bands can do that. They sort of like grow with their audience and are still relevant. And you have that lifelong fan that way. I always think that's really cool compared to like bands, which maybe you liked when you were in high school, and then you can still look back fondly on the albums from high school, but
you don't currently connect to them in the same way.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a little bit of my frustration with some of the like emo night culture is like, it's all nostalgia and like that's cool and that's fun. Look, I've been to an emo night, it was fun. How could you not have a great time, right? Like if I'm gonna go dancing with people, I'd rather be music that I like. But it's like, you know, it almost feels like ignoring the new music even from these same bands to just play the stuff that was popular in like 2003. Which, look, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just like, you know, it's valid to find something to like that you relate to now too.
Mm-hmm.
I want to read a couple Amazon customer reviews. There were not, again, not many that mentioned this song. A.M. Lewis gave the album a 3 out of 5, says, not a bad little album. All in all, Cardiology is not such a bad little album. They still can't figure out who they are. Right Where I Belong bears striking similarities to Angels and Airwaves, but still, there is some good stuff on there.
Similarities, yes, but it is not a direct rip of Angels and Airwaves, because Angels and Airwaves is much more like, I think they go to the Pink Floyd level of like cinematic soundscapes.
Well,
whereas I mean, I feel like this still feels pretty grounded in as a alternative rock song.
Yeah, and like, I mean, you're a big Angels fan, a big Tom fan. I'm sure you've read like, you know, interviews with Tom over the years.
Yes.
And look, Tom was addicted to painkillers, and he said a lot of wacky stuff around the first couple albums. And he, you know, when he got off painkillers, like admitted, like, yeah, no, I said a lot of wacky stuff. Like, but yeah, Pink Floyd is kind of a good comparison for Angels in that sense. And I think there's also just a theme of belonging and fitting in that is more of a Good Charlotte thing than I feel like is a Angels thing.
Yeah. Angels and Airwaves is about exploring like huge, like their first 4 albums were all about exploring like the concept of love.
Yeah.
And Good Charlotte have always been like true to what I think is the core of the punk rock message, which is like, we are outsiders, but you belong with us.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, when Tom goes into Angels mode, we're thinking we're going big.
Yeah. It was interesting. I saw Angels this past fall, right after, not even a month after Life Forms came out. And it was really fun. And, you know, Tom is like, he's saying, oh, you know, our bass player, one of the guys is single, ladies, you know, he's on the market, you know, he's making like, you know, dick jokes and the kind of stuff, you know, people have always like found funny about him. And then he's like giving this speech about tunnels and like losing faith and just exploring that with God and his dad being really sick and passing. And I don't think he is as much Tom himself thinks he is like bigger than Jesus anymore. I don't know if he ever said that, but you know, he might as well have in the first couple albums, you know.
And yeah,
I don't think he's that anymore, but there's still a little bit of a, it's like almost a religious thing with Tom of like, hey, no, like I'll show you like a new way, like a new, like there's love in the universe and there is like more than like what you are dealing with now. Right. There's like a lot of like hope and optimism. Like there is more out there than what you are dealing with right now. And yes, there's a lot of like aliens with that, but also I think it is meant to inspire people to, you know, do more with their life kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, his music definitely did that for me. Like
same, like,
yeah, 100%. I've always felt like if I ever met Tom, like I feel like we would get along pretty well because I feel like we have a lot of similar, like just sort of like to think about like concepts and things. And I love his guitars. Like I have two. I was my wife for a wedding gift found one of his Stratocasters, which has been discontinued for years.
Very cool.
And that was like my dream guitar in high school. So I've always really connected with that guy.
Yeah, I have too. And, you know, just interesting stories. I was diagnosed with ADHD not quite 6 months ago. And like, it was like an interesting few months leading up to actually being diagnosed. Cause I was like, oh, like I'm so organized. And then reflecting on like, okay, well, I have all these organizational systems that don't actually work for me. Like they just like make my life harder. But you know, I'm so organized and oh, I'm so successful, but oh, I have had to work very hard for things that some people say should not be hard. And like, I can even point to many points in my life where I have not been as successful as I want. And, you know, a lot of like identity kind of questioning in that sense. And I remember, you know, like, I love just like reading or listening to interviews with Han because I feel like I get how his brain thinks. And then I read in a kind of recent one where he mentions that, like, yeah, I found out a few years ago I have ADHD, and I'm like, this makes sense. I'm like, this is why I like your reading interviews with you so much, because like you go off on a tangent and I'm just like, yes, I get that. I do that too. And that's exactly what I'm doing right now. Going off on a tangent a little bit.
I mean, that's why I love podcasting, is it allows for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think to me, the whole beauty of this podcast is like, it's a Good Charlotte podcast, but it's so cool to me to like, just hear all the different things that it brings up. And after we finish recording, I'm very excited to tell you about what the episode that comes after this one will be.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Well, Will, I want to wrap up and just ask you, how has Right Where I Belong held up for you over time?
For me, this holds up as one of my all-time favorite Good Charlotte songs. And to me, a underrated Good Charlotte song, given that it's never been played live, or that it's as far as like the deep cuts go, this is one of my favorites from the band.
I'd be really curious if you were to sit down. I would be really curious to sit down and talk with Benji, because I get the vibe that Benji did a lot of the writing on this song. Mm-hmm. But I'm really curious if you were to sit down and talk with him about this song today and how he relates to it today. And looking back, I'd be really so curious to hear what he says. I mean, I feel that way about every song.
Yeah. Well, if I ever get him on Between Awesome and Disaster, I will make sure to ask this.
Yes.
I've tweeted at him before, but I'm going to keep trying.
Yeah. Well, what has Good Charlotte meant to you over the years, and how has that changed?
To me, Good Charlotte were like one of my seminal bands of my high school era. I remember there was one summer in high school where I lost like 50 pounds over the summer. And the way I did it was by bicycling around my very small town. My mom's house that I grew up in is on a circle. So I would just bike in that circle for like 2 hours every day. And
that'll do it. Yeah.
And one of the ways that I got through that is, this is back now, any younger listeners listening to this, there was a time when you had to have a CD player if you wanted to listen to music on the go. And I had a little like neoprene, like fanny pack thing almost with my CD player in it. And I could take 3 CDs with me that would get me through that time. So I was like, okay, I want to listen to albums I can listen to all the way through. So a lot of times it was Enema of the State. It was Phoenix TX's self-titled, or Say It Like You Mean It by The Starting Line. And in that rotation frequently was The Young and the Hopeless. So I will always, that will be the album I'll forever have a soft spot with. And Good Charlotte are always going to be like my band because they're from near where I grew up. They're from Maryland and I'm from Maryland.
Right. You knew Waldorf. Like
exactly. So they will always be the local band that made good, that showed me that it's possible.
Yeah.
Possible to be from here and then go off and do what you dream of.
Look at you. You live in New York. Like, you have a podcast, you're a musician, like you're doing it, you know?
Yeah. Like, I've fulfilled a lot of my own goals and am living my own dreams, and it's really satisfying.
It's awesome. It's the best feeling. I'm super happy to hear that. Will, do you have any last words about Right Where I Belong, about Good Charlotte, or about yourself or any of your own endeavors?
It's a great song by a great band, and I think more people should listen to it and appreciate it for sure.
Amazing. So we have the Generation GC and Friends Spotify playlist. I mean, I'm gonna have to put Tunnels by Needles and Airwaves, gonna have to put those 2 Bo Bascoro songs, and of course Right Where I Belong. Could you give me a recommendation of something you're listening to lately and enjoying? Anything that's not Good Charlotte.
I am a big fan of State Champ's newest album.
Okay.
I think it's called Kings of the New School.
Something like that. Kings of the New Age, I think.
Kings of the New Age. That's it.
Yeah.
And the new single from that album is called Act Like That.
Okay.
And I think this is like a ridiculously catchy pop rock song. And I think it's unique in that it has a guest vocal by a pop country singer named Mitchell Tenpenny.
Oh, and, I know that.
And I have not, outside of Alex Mountain's YouTube channel, I've never seen country and pop punk collaborate together. And his,
we have to mention Hey Monday. I mean, not a collaboration, but going from pop punk to country.
Right. That's a good example. But I just think this guy's guest verse he does is so catchy. And I just, it has this very sort of like boppy bass line. And so I would really recommend that for the playlist. And if I could do one more kind of deep cut, and it's kind of nerdy. There's a Japanese band that I love called The Winking Owl. They're sort of like alternative rock meets J-pop. And they have a song called New that have been obsessed with for years. They're on indefinite hiatus, but if you want to look up the song New from their album, Thank You Love Letter, it is a super catchy pop rock song. Love it.
Sure. Thank you for those recommendations, Will.
Absolutely.
Well, as we head out, I would love to ask, you know, if people want to keep up with you and everything you've got going on, where can they follow you? What's the best place to know what you've got going on?
Well, everything I have and do is can be found at my website, which is awesomedisaster.com. That has links to my Facebook, my Twitter, my Instagram, which is WillCarry23 on Instagram, and my podcast. The website also has links to my Patreon, merch shop, all that stuff.
Perfect.
And then my podcast, Between Awesome and Disaster, is available wherever you listen to podcasts. And we have new episodes I have new episodes every Monday.
Perfect. Will, thank you so much for coming on this show. And listeners, thank you for tuning in. Last time, we talked about a song from Good Morning Revival. Our next episode will be a bonus episode covering something that is not a Good Charlotte studio album track. My name is Molly Huddleston once again. And as always, I've been your host, as well as the producer, creator, and editor of this podcast. You can follow Generation GC at Generation GC Pod, P-O-D, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And you can follow me, Molly, at M Huddleston, M-H-U-D-E-L-S-O-N, on Twitter and Instagram. Please make sure to follow or subscribe to the show wherever you listen, you know, rate, leave a review, but most importantly, tell your friends. That's how the Generation GC fam keeps growing. Thanks for tuning in.